behalf of the Professional Development Committee, I'm welcoming you to our session that actually happens to be in the middle of our week. We still have one day tomorrow. And today's session, or panel, actually, is about instruction, construction, structuring multi-session classes. And we have here Leah Sola from Physical Sciences Library, Ira Martinez from IRIS, Deborah Landines from ILAR, and Thomas Mills from Law Library.
Okay, this panel was put together by PSEC Instruction Committee to kind of look at structuring multi-session classes, especially for credit semester-long classes in a library kind of context. And people on this panel represent quite a cross-section of different kinds of classes. So we'll each spend about 15 minutes talking about our classes, and then we'll have a kind of a discussion session at the end. I'm going to be going first to talk about graduate level class. Then Ida will talk about an undergraduate level, followed by Thomas, who will present a professional class in a professional setting, and then Deb will talk about some work she's done with extension. Okay, my name is Leah Sola, chemistry librarian, and I teach Chem 602, Information Literacy for the Physical Scientist. It's a grad level, one credit class, and one of those syllabi that we've handed out corresponds to that class. And being a grad level class, grads are really ready to incorporate information and research into their whole kind of program environment at the university level, especially in chemistry, I've noticed. And so they're ready, and actually I get half new grads who are trying to get a clue when they come in, and half senior graduating chemistry majors who are trying to get a heads up before they get to their graduate school program where they're going. So definitely it's something that's on their minds. And chemical information is a pretty complex environment. Chemistry information is incorporated right into the study of chemistry. Chemistry is about characterizing compounds, so you're capturing a lot of information, a lot of metadata. So there's been a long history in chemistry departments, certainly in the US, about having these kind of courses as part of their curriculum. And actually the guidelines, the accreditation guidelines for chemistry programs in the United States strongly recommends having a regular program of instruction in chemical information literacy. So this class, Chem 602, under this name, has been running since 1995, and all that time we've only missed 1 year teaching it. It's changed a lot during that time. I've taught it 6 times now, I think. And it's a completely different class than it was in the beginning, but it's still very rich and full. Still a lot to cover, even more, I guess, now, with the electronic environment. And because there are these classes all over the country and the guidelines support it, there's been a lot of support among the societies, chemistry societies, for this kind of education, and there's committees that get together and we share resources and we share lesson plans, and so there's a lot of national presence behind it. And so I encourage anyone else who's thinking about trying to start up a credit class, you know, even if there isn't kind of these guidelines already in place saying do this, that if you can get together with your colleagues and share a lot of the materials, you know, find your colleagues out there who are doing something similar and share our materials, and it makes you look more prepared when you go to the departments and say, look at all this stuff that's already been put together. It's a really strong program happening already nationally. I think there's a lot to that, and we definitely constantly try to cycle that concept through the departments. Remember, this is in the guidelines. And so, the syllabus that I handed around, I just wanted to go over just really briefly. Being a grad level class, I teach it in the evenings. That's when the department is determined that grads are done with their lab responsibilities and are allowed to take extra classes. So it's a little bit difficult for all of us, but I usually bring treats. Although it's really difficult for me because I've been working all day too. It's an SU class, it's for one credit. And to get a satisfactory, I really want the students to come to all the classes and complete all the assignments. And my main goal here is I just want them to have gone through the process and experienced it so that when they get into their graduate research, you know, they can kind of feel out what will work for them, but at least they've kind of gotten a broad sense of the information landscape as it exists in chemistry. It's actually 8 sessions, so it's not even 14 sessions anymore. This is something new I did last year. I teach for 8 sessions for 2 hours. And that was partly in response to the students. It gets real crazy at the end of the semester, and they were also telling me, you know, if we could do more of this up front in the class, and I could apply it to my final projects in my other class. So I said, well, let's just collapse the whole thing down. And I think I lost maybe 1 hour and 15 minutes of instruction time, because I used to have, you know, 75-minute lectures all 14 weeks, and now it's 2-hour lectures. But it's much better. 2 hours is actually a much better time. You have a lot of opportunity to do a little bit of demoing, have them do some hands-on, a little more demoing, a little hands-on. It's kind of a nice cycle that's really worked out well, and they really get into it. 2 hours is a good chance for people to get lost in the information, which is a good thing. There is a lot of hands-on. Maybe about half the class time total ends up being hands-on, and what the hands-on is are the assignments. And so they usually can get about 3/4 of those done right during the class. You know, and that was another really important thing that I and the students have been figuring out over time. Don't want to stress them out about information. You want them to be excited about information. So make sure they can get it done in class. And of course, the other advantage is they're doing it right after I've showed it to them. I get to watch them. Do they have a clue what I just said? You know, kind of, what are they? You know, also I learn a lot from them too in terms of, you know, when they're getting on some of these resources, what are they thinking about? What's the importance? And so I do put together a lot of questions. All the questions in the assignments are based on reference questions that I've either had or my colleagues have had across the country, and we share a lot of these. So they're realistic kind of questions that people have actually really experienced the need for in their research. And that really makes a big difference, the context, I think, of the question. And I tell that to my students, you know, you may not have this kind of specific question ever, but somebody, you know, one of your colleagues out there did, so this is real life. And that makes a big difference. And then in addition to maybe an answer or something, I always require them for every question to give me their search strategy, their thought process, the resources they choose to use, and the search terms. And I've gotten better about being really specific in what I ask them, but not about what research they're going to use. So I just want to open the gate, see what they use, and it's always very interesting. Just wanted to highlight one of the assignments I do. It's a class on property information, and 28 million known chemical compounds, several hundred properties for each compound, billions of pieces of data. Okay, fabulous resources in print, very well curated and organized. It's been way too expensive, and we don't have any money to afford putting these resources online. So what's emerged online is all these chemistry faculty putting up little impromptu databases on the web so that they can get their work done. So that's the environment, classic print resources, the web for chemical information. So it's just kind of out there. You know, and so it's kind of delusional. I give the students, you know, I show them like the top 5 places to start online, and then just kind of turn them loose on questions that have actually been answered. So I know there's at least one answer out there, and see what they do. And they always come back to me, this is so hard. We thought it would be easy. We thought we'd just get on the internet, go into Wikipedia, and no, they have to look 5 places first. And it's really difficult. So I just love that assignment because it's such a teaching moment about, you know, if you really do need this data point, you're going to have to work for it, maybe. So I think that's my time. Assessment, I just wanted to say a little bit more about that. Again, the assignments are probably the key in terms of assessing the students, what they write in their assignment, watching them do it. That's really been revealing. And I have to tweak. I often have to tweak the assignments too if they're kind of getting off on a sidetrack and I kind of want to keep them focused. I've also started at the beginning of my lecture part of the period doing a Q&A, a little brief Q&A with the students where I ask them, have you ever needed to find the boiling point of this chemical for an experiment you were designing? Where did you look? Who did you ask for help? Just to see where they are. And actually that's really quite revealing too. It's kind of like a pre-test in a way. Not a formal one, but. And then in terms of assessment of the instructor, again, the assignments can be very revealing in how much they're getting. Then also the department gives me standard evaluations to use, and then I supplement that with some additional questions fill in the little bubble kind of things. And they're usually pretty positive. I just have one comment. I mean, they're generally pretty positive, but I just have one comment I have to read. This is so funny. Very helpful course. I learned a lot about the resources we have. And I've learned that librarians really know a lot. I had to think about that one for a minute when I got that. Oh, really? Is that a good thing? So, in terms of the future of the class, I mean, it's been running 12 years. It's very successful. Almost all the evaluations are very positive. They always, the main challenge comment, of course, is we want more. Yeah, right. Come see me. I'll sit down with you. And the restructuring with 8 sessions has been really positive, but the enrollment is not as high as I would like to be. You know, grad students, and this is probably going to be a challenge for anyone who does a class for grad students, maybe different with professional, but just research students, really busy, don't like to take classes. They're burned out from whatever else they're doing. But the ones who have taken it said it was worth their time, and it's more a matter of more PR. I mean, the class has been running for 12 years. It's part of the landscape of the chemistry department. You know, 5 or 6 years ago, I went around and really pushed heavily and sat down with every faculty member and talked about it. I haven't done that in a while, so it's time for me to go and say, look, remember? Chem 602. So, you want to do questions at all, or just kind of move on?
I'll do questions at the end.
Okay, I think that makes sense. Okay, Ida's going to talk to us about her class for undergraduates.
A lot of what Leah says resonates with what I'm doing, even with undergraduates as well. And I have something to look forward to because she's met with a lot more success. My class is relatively young. I've offered it only for 3 semesters so far, and always in the spring. So my handout is the cream-colored front page and then the white-colored back page that are stapled together. LSP 101 is also 1 credit, SU, and completely elective. And even though it's offered under the Latino Studies program, it's open to any undergraduate. For the last 2 semesters, I've had a very good mix of freshmen through seniors sign up for this class, and not all of them were Latino Studies concentrators. The main reason students say they're taking this class or sign up for it is one of 3 things. Either they've been told by their professors that their research needs some help, and so they found this course and they're going to take it. They're preparing for professional school or graduate school, and they know that their research skills need to be honed a little bit better. And third is they were just looking for a 1 credit course to fill out their class load. For some reason or another, they looked through and they were looking for a 1 credit course, and this one appealed to them. So we go once a week, Wednesday mornings from 10:10 to 11, all 14 weeks during the semester, but I'm liking Leah's idea about doing 8 sessions for 2 hours each. For the same reason, they get very busy at the end of the semester, I have found out, and then it's really hard getting the final assignment from them in a timely manner, or all of a sudden there's a rush at the end to meet with all of them during office hours. So. Thank you, Leah, for that suggestion. I might incorporate that next year.
Too, believe me. Done halfway through.
The syllabus is developed primarily out of what the Latino Studies faculty have asked me to do. I was sitting with them in a staff meeting, and they were complaining in general, or just talking in general, about the quality of the research papers they had been receiving, not just from Latino Studies program students. Latino Studies faculty come from English, history, sociology, health and nutritional sciences, music. So they were just talking in general about the quality of research, and they asked me if I could teach a 1 credit course and that they would push it and they would encourage it, and I said, fine, absolutely. So all of the things that we do focus around everything in the research process except the reading and the writing. So what we do is the topic selection, the topic narrowing, the resource discovery, finding resources for a paper, and then they do the middle part. They actually have to read the articles and write the paper. And then I pick up again on citing the information properly and putting it into a good annotated bibliography. What I like about this class is that, again, the students are immediately appreciative and you get immediate feedback from them, freshmen through seniors, who say, I'm applying this already to this paper. So most of the topics that they choose to do their annotated bibliography for is a paper that they're actually writing, and not just something that they've made up. And they apply what they learn in this class to their other papers as well, and not just the Latino studies part of it. So the other thing I do in terms, the annotated bibliography is the main assignment, but like Leah says, the in-class on hands-on assignments are key, because for me, I can also immediately see if they're getting what I'm teaching them. You have an example of one of the assignments that I give them, and that's on the last page of your handouts. So after we cover a number of databases and search strategies and how to formulate a search and use thesaurus and help and all that other stuff, I give them an in-class assignment where they could work in pairs, and I just want to make sure that they're able to find good scholarly resources for their papers. They love these hands-on assignments. They can't get enough of them. I think the one time I taught literary resources, MLA and Lion and LRC, I didn't give them an in-class assignment. We just kind of went over them and did a few examples together. And they were upset that I didn't give them a hands-on assignment, because they really want to do this in every single class. So the class is structured by 10:15 to about 10:40. I lecture and show, and then for the last 20 minutes, it's all hands-on. They're doing and handing in the assignment, like Leah says, right there in class as well. So they can do this usually in 20 minutes after just about half an hour of instruction. Let's see. There's a few things that I have also from the students in terms of their feedback. One of the course evaluation questions asked, what did you get most out of this class? And every single one of the answers has nothing to do with whether or not they learned something about Latino studies. But instead, every single one of them has to do with how they learned to do research. And so some of their comments were, I can now find information on any subject. I can effectively find resources for any paper I have to write. And I have a better understanding of how to do research for my papers. So I like that it's offered under Latino studies. I like that I tell them at the beginning, you have to choose a topic related to Latino studies to do your final bibliography. All of the all of the examples that we do in searching has to do with Latino studies, but they're applying these skills to everything else that they're doing. And so that's one of the highlights of the class, is the students themselves. They show up, they give me immediate feedback. They come and see me at the reference desk. They turned in great course evaluations, and all of them unanimously said they would absolutely recommend this to other students, without a doubt, because it was so helpful to them. So for the future direction of the class, I could actually want to see more sections of this class offered. We capped this class at 15, and this past semester we had 22 students, so we over-enrolled it by 7. I would have had more, except that the students who wanted to add had a conflict with the Wednesday morning 10:10 class time. And they were emailing me to find out if there was another section or an independent study they could take. So I could easily imagine that I would have had 30 students this past semester if everyone who wanted to take it was able to take it. I'm also thinking about perhaps cross-listing it with a few other area studies programs. I've made some good, does this make sense, some outreach inroads with the Asian American Studies program, with the American Indian program, and I think if I talk to Erica Cree about Africana Studies, we might be able to cross-list this and have it show up in the course catalog in more than just one place, and that's under LSP 101. But if it was Asian American Studies 101, AIP 101, or whatever, and then offered maybe more sections that might reach more students. And that's what I'm thinking of long-term, or maybe even next semester, but I would obviously need help. One of the biggest challenges of teaching an undergraduate research studies course for credit is the time commitment. So yes, I'm grading papers on weekends. I'm putting lesson plans together at night. I have to do my job on top of teaching this class. So, but I like it, and I don't want to give it up. So if I could also look into time sharing the class, maybe having other librarians teach 2 or 3 sessions, and then I teach 5, and then we have guest lectures for a few others. There's a lot of possibilities, I think, here. One, to get more librarians involved in one credit courses, and 2, to get more students into these types of courses as well. So that's what I'm looking forward to. The other highlight for sure is that there's full faculty and staff support from the Latino Studies program. They're the best marketers, other than the students recommending it to their friends. The faculty and staff are the best marketers of this program. Anyone who comes to sign up to be an LSP concentrator, they push a brochure in their face saying, look at this course, consider this course, because the faculty are concerned about them getting ahead of the game in terms of what it takes to do academic research. And the other challenge is, like Leah said as well, is the enrollment. There's a rather long period at the beginning of the semester for undergraduates to add and drop classes. And so sometimes I start off with 5, and then it balloons to 11, and then it goes back to 7. And I don't really have a set class until about the end of February. It's very challenging, especially if they miss those first few classes, because then they're behind. Because the first thing we do is do vocabulary and Library of Congress stuff and the catalog, and they need to have that foundational information before we can move on to advanced searches and database searches. So it's very hard to catch up and to get everyone up to speed by the time the ad drop period is over. And I think that's all I wanted to say. Yeah, the assignments, the course resources, how it's incorporated into the curriculum is by doing the annotated bibliography and having them choose a topic, highlights and challenges. And like I said, you have the syllabus and you have some, like a little fact sheet about the program and a assignment example. And the other thing is I'm relatively new at this. I've only been a librarian for 3.5 years. And so I welcome suggestions as well from more seasoned reference librarians. Look at my syllabus, tell me, why aren't you teaching Web of Science? Because I know that's missing and I should be teaching Web of Science. Why aren't you teaching them this? Why aren't you teaching them that? I'm happy to take suggestions. Thank you.
It's been interesting listening to Leah and Ida because there's a lot of commonality even with what we do at the law school. And I have a little thick packet there, so you a broad overview of what we are doing at the law school. There's 6 research attorneys and we all teach. And the first is on the lawyering program. The lawyering program is a mandatory class that all first-year law students must take. It's a legal research and writing class, and we co-teach it with a writing person. We each teach one section of 30 to 35 students. And in a way, it gives us sort of a leg up with the students in one that we can preach to them about the importance of research and legal research. This is what you're going to be doing in your career. But also, we know where they're at then, or where they should be, when they sign up for advanced legal research classes. When they sign up for those classes, they should have a foundation, and we can build off of that foundation that they've had in their first year. Beyond the first year, in the second and third year, we have classes, advanced legal research classes, and there's actually a series of them that we offer, which is the next 2 pages. And they range from a 3-credit advanced legal research class, which is sort of a generic covering many topics, a legal research class for LLM students, which LLM students are foreign attorneys that come here for 1 year. I teach a 2-credit class on foreign and international research, and then we have a series of 1-credit half-semester classes on business law, business technology. We're going to be offering a new one on online research, etc. They are graded classes, but there's an SU option if the students would like that. As far as interaction or reception from the law school administration, it's been very positive. We've built this program up over the past 2.5-3 years in offering more classes. In part, I think that our acceptance into the curriculum and teaching in part is due to high student evaluations that we've been receiving. The students recognize the value of the classes that we teach. We all have the same education as the faculty, so they see us as experts within the field. We will all, since we all have law degrees, we all went through a legal research and writing program. and we know what our experience was like, and we know how to change it to make it better. There's also a growing recognition that law grads need more legal research skills, better legal research skills. There's been studies performed. The students recognize it. The law firms are screaming for it, because the students graduate and they, if they don't know how to effectively and efficiently research, they're not going to be earning their $150,000 a year. There's also the possibility that of a bar-like exam for research being put in place. And if that's put in place, obviously, it's going to stress the importance of the classes that we teach even more so. So as I said, all of our proposals for classes have been accepted by the law school administration. So I think that has gone well. As for the classes themselves, the structure of the classes, each of the classes are capped at 16 students. This is in part because our teaching laboratory has 16 seats, but we've actually moved out of that into a classroom that is wired more or less. So the one credit classes we can lift the cap on and accept a few more students. But again, with time, we can't throw open the doors and have 30, 40 students. The way we structure them, I included a couple of syllabi here. The first one is for the half semester one credit business law class that Gene Callahan teaches. And Gene, if I say anything wrong, you can correct me. But as you can see, we talk a lot about course objectives and what is the purpose, and this is our driving as we develop the course. What do we want these students to be able to do once they are finished with the class? And for us, since we are at a professional school and the students are going into a profession that we ourselves know, it's easy for us to determine what it is that they do need to know and develop these sort of course objectives. The classes themselves are pretty much run on a sort of a interactive lecture type basis, sort of similar to what Ida was saying. In the beginning, a lecture, question and answer, and then examples of the hands-on examples at the end, which the law students love as well. Mm-hmm. Because it's the tie into the real world. As Leah does, I bring in real world examples that I get off the internet through email, reference questions, and the students love it. One example, I got an email. Somebody at the firm sent out an email. An attorney this person was working with was looking for an EU and European Union case. And the attorney has been looking for 3 or 4 hours for this case and can't find it. Well, we had just happened to cover EU materials. So I gave it to the students and they had it in 5 minutes. They knew where to go and they could pull it up, and they were just glowing. They were like, wow, you know, which I reinforced that idea too, that when you go into your job and if you are an effective and efficient researcher, you're gonna shine if you know how to do this. So that tie in, that hook, I think helps a lot. Outside of the class, we have exercises. I put an example of one of the exercises that I give. Again, trying to make them somewhat real world and reinforcing the ideas, the concepts, the databases, et cetera, that we covered in class. Two of the classes, the advanced legal research class, the general class, and my class, we do have capstone projects where we ask the students to put together an annotated research guide for an attorney. And what we do is we ask the students to choose the area of law that they would like to cover. It serves a couple of functions. The students, again, it reinforces their interest level. It's something, they usually pick something that they're going to go be practicing in. So they see the worth of doing this final project as opposed to me telling them what to create a guide for. And I've had a lot of students comment to me, I wish I'd done this before I went to my second year job, where I was practicing in this area, or I'm going to be practicing afterwards, and this is fantastic. This will help me a lot. So again, it's the tie to the real world, which I think for us at a professional school is really important. I think, Leah, you mentioned too that grad students are very busy.
Yeah.
Law students, extremely busy, a lot of pressure. If they can't see the worth of something, it falls in their priorities. So by stressing this is what you're going to be doing, that's why we're here. And in fact, that's how I usually start each class. I ask them a couple questions. I said, fast forward, you've graduated, you're working. What are you going to be doing each day? Someone finally says, I'm going to be researching. Bingo. What are you going to be doing with it? You're going to be writing about your research. And if the research is faulty, your writing's not going to be good. So this sort of tie-in, and I think they all recognize the need for it, the skills. And as I said, a lot of students from this law school, they go to the big firms, and they're paid a lot of money. And there's a lot of pressure, and there's a lot of competition. So they want to, they're competitive people. They want to perform the best that they can. Also, again, something that Leah said as far as an annotated type answer. For my exercises, I always ask for an annotated answer. Give me your research path. And I tell the students, you know, a question might be worth 7-8 points, and you will earn points all along the way. You may ultimately not find exactly the correct answer, but two things. I can show you where you've gone wrong, and up to that point, you'll get 6 of the 8 points. You will still earn some credit. So it's a little bit more work for them, but ultimately I think it reinforces what they're learning, and then I can close any loop of any mistake to help them. Let's see. Something else that we have, I have what I call as a 20-minute rule, that if they're working on a question and they're getting nowhere, stop and get a hold of me. Again, in part because they're very busy. I don't want them wasting time. I'm becoming frustrated. But also, if one student has the question, likelihood others might have the question. And if it's a good question that I think others might have, I'll answer to the whole class, and everybody will be that much better off for it. One of the drawbacks of having students being able to choose their different topics and not have, you know, common exercises cross, it takes a lot more time grading. I, you know, just last week spent I don't know how many hours of pages and pages, because each student had a different, it takes that much more time to grade. I know Jean has commented the same thing. Something that Jean does in her class, which I think is very interesting, is she has them choose a corporation that they're interested in and follow that corporation throughout her class as they're looking at business law. Again, the tie-in is there because of their interest, but it's also, we have known students who then have used that research to get a job at the corporation. So it's good for the tie-in. It's extra time for us, but I still think it's worthwhile. Our syllabi, as I said, is objective-driven. We tend not to have an assigned text. We draw things off of the web or put things onto reserve. Some of our classes, we have to cover substantive material as well, because the students don't come in with the same background, be it business law, foreign law, international law. So to get everybody on the same playing field, same level, we have to cover some substantive material as well, which adds extra work, extra time into the syllabus, but it's necessary. As far as challenges in the future, One of our challenges, which is sort of ridiculous, is, as I said, we moved into a wired classroom. However, the law faculty don't like the wired classroom, and so actually we have to have it turned on and off, and there's only one class. We have wireless throughout the building, but they keep it very low, so the faculty don't want the students on the computers during their classes, whereas we want them on the computers during our classes. So that's a bit of a back and forth with the faculty. As the number of courses are offered and as demand increases, again, it's going to be time. How are we going to spend our time with everything else that we have to do? ACC has been very good. One of the common comments, I wish I'd known about this earlier, which is why I think we try and average